Blog Talk Radio.
Off the Rack, and I'm your host, Raconteur. We're a community of poets hanging out on oldpoetry.com. You can come and check us out and find us almost any time. And I guess the moral of the song is, if you don't say what's on your mind, you're going to unnecessarily hurt somebody's feelings, or at least risk it. Right, Heather? I think we got a couple of people on the line, but first let me say hello to my co-host and the beautiful pretty bird, making
hello,
me look
hello.
Good. Doing the impossible sleight of hand over there. How you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you?
You know, sitting here and finding words. you know, the topic kind of came a little easy. Just, you know, I don't know why. You know, I think fairy tales, Halloween scariness, and my mind went to the fairy tales. And fairy tales back in the day especially, they were always trying to teach us something. So let's see what we can kind of cobbled together. It may not be Frankenstein, but you know, that was a lot of fun. I think we got a couple of people on the line. Let's let them in and come in out of the draft. Hello, hello, Sweepy.
Hello, hello. Yeah. I'm on mute. I'm sorry. Sorry.
No, that's
sorry.
Okay.
Hello,
don't
darling.
Apologize. Hey, Hatter.
Hey.
So, do you guys have any anything going on? You just chilling?
Just chilling. Got my surgery scheduled 29th of November. So, I'll be med up.
Wow. Yeah, that's weird. Events and things like that, it's like you can imagine, you know, oh, there's something big going on, you're looking forward to it, but when it comes to surgery, it's like, I don't know if I'd be looking forward to that. It's like something's supposed to get fixed, but, you know, I'm going to be operated on, and there's always the chance of complications, so that's got to be a weird, that I haven't had surgeries myself, but...
Complications? What are you talking about?
Let me shut up now.
I'm supposed to be a lot faster when I get down.
Well, less money in your pockets weighing you down. Oh, man. Yeah. All right. I don't know. Tomorrow, the story. I don't know. Like I said, just I always think of that the fractured fairy tales from back in the day and things like that, where there was always that message that everything they tried to squeeze a message into. Every time you turned around, it was like, you know, Mom always said, don't play ball in the house. It just showed up. There's no avoiding it. So. It was kind of a cop.
Yeah, there was a time in Europe where there was wolves, and that when wolves got hungry or whatever, they would come down and they were a danger, and they eliminated them.
Species. There's no more wolves in Europe now?
Well, it's like Hansel and Gretel. You know, they'll go in the woods, the witch will eat you. the Red Riding Hood, the wolf.
The big bad wolf. Who's afraid of the bad wolf? You know, they want to call them morals or whatever, but to me it's almost common sense. You could find it in anything, really. You know, pull it out of, your bed's dirty. Well, wipe your feet before you go to bed or so. I don't know. The moral of the story is.
Yeah. That's
anyway,
what I wrote about with dreams.
I'm sorry, what'd you write about? A dream?
Dreams.
Oh.
Yeah.
That those are always open to interpretation. But sometimes
Yeah, I already warned you, so.
That's fine. Yours will probably be more on. Hell, even the opening theme is on topic, so you're good, Hatter. Put by our own Jay Hatter and played and sung by Shout Even Shy. I don't think I mentioned that tonight.
You did now.
Yeah. So you get credit for the first moral.
I think I get paid.
Was she a televangelist moral oral?
Oral Roberts.
Is that came from somewhere. I don't want to mention where I pulled it from, but yeah, it's moral oral. I don't know why that sticks in my brain.
Oh my God. To talk about the moral oral of the insanity of this world. So I'm watching television today. Not that this has anything to do with anything. But I'm watching TV today. We're going through all the political ads or something. And all of a sudden, this ad comes up. And it says, are you tired of the political ads? I only know one man that's never lied to me. One man that isn't running for Congress. One man that has always been there for me.
Jesus Christ.
One man. Exactly!
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Jesus Christ. If only Jesus Christ was running for Congress. And it was from Billy Graham Jr. And I'm like, well, Jesus Christ isn't running for Congress. If he was, I might vote for him. But are you tired of the people running? for pitiful cause. Well, I only know one man that has ever been true and never lied, and that was Jesus Christ. I swear to you, that was the freaking political commercial I saw today, and I almost cracked my pants. No kidding.
I'd be running on the Punches Pilot platform, I guess. Oh.
I could not believe it. Really? You're going to throw that commercial in as a political stand to get people to put money into your church?
Vote Catholic.
It really started off like a political commercial. Are you tired of congressmen lying to you? Are you tired of the political crap? Are you tired of these political commercials and all these people lying to you? I only know one man that has never lied, and that man was Jesus Christ. And I literally dropped my jaw.
You didn't get an interview.
I know. I'm like, I didn't know he was running for Congress. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you're
right on topic, and a good thing for oral origin. You know, if you're going to drop your jaw, you don't want to lose your teeth at the same time.
That might happen.
That's why I said, good thing for oral gel.
Exactly. No, it's not oral gel. Oral gel is to numb it. It's Fixident.
Thank you. See, I'm not as funny as I thought. Unless you count my looks. No humor like self-deprecating humor. Pretty Bird, you still there?
I am.
You're uncharacteristically quiet.
That's because my brain is like, why is it pilot and not Pilates if it's Pilates with an S? And why is it, you know, because my brain is grammar retarded.
Just Pilates. I like it.
You know?
I know where that came from. You don't fool me. Your mind works a little similar to mine. I'm warped, damn it, and it's catchy. Don't listen unless you want to catch it. Oh, my goodness.
OMG, did you just say I'm contagious, like I'm a disease? It's fine.
Well, kind of. And I'd like to catch you.
Well, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush.
OMG.
So did you catch any worms this morning, Pretty Bird?
No worms, because ew. However.
Yeah, ew.
When you were all the moral of the story, my mind went two places. First of all, it went to, and this is the rest of the story, which has nothing to do with morals, but I was forced to listen to that junk on the way to my bus stop in high school, because my father was all about that before full on talk radio was like a thing. And so I would listen to all of these things. And so my mind went there, and it went to, like, the monkey's paw and the gift of the magi and the necklace, because that one, me with my lean towards, you know, why don't you just fess up, you know, that working your whole life, getting old before your time to replace a necklace that was fake to begin with, could have saved yourself some trouble if you just said, I lost it. I mean, and then if she said, well, you know, pay it back, you pay it back. You know, you offer to pay it back, but don't just spend, you know, well, you know, take out loans and do whatever to pay back a necklace you lost that wasn't real to begin with, just because you didn't want to say something.
Spoiler alert.
Well, it's the whole point of the show is the moral. You just jump to the chase.
No, I meant if you hadn't heard that story before and you didn't know that that was what the story was about. Never mind.
Well, now you do.
Spoiler alert. That's fine. Never mind.
I just reread mine. It's got nothing to do with morals. I mean,
neither does mine, but there's a moral in everything. We'll find it for you.
Okay. I tried.
The moral of the story is you should have started writing earlier.
Yep. That's an easy subject to just write a novel with, trying to.
Well, I mean, you know, even the morals are twisted. You know, you talk about the early bird catches the worm. Well, what about the early worm? What does he get? He gets dead. So, you know.
Well, yeah, the late worm. Very
neat.
Warm gets to work. Something about sleeping in. Be a worm.
All right. I guess we got a couple of rights. We didn't get a fill tonight, right? You said
no.
Tyson, everybody
we
present.
Have, yeah, and Stephen and Lockdown Larks and AP Crystal Deb.
Okay. We don't know if Crystal Deb AP are going to call.
Crystal's going to call for a bit. I don't know about the other two. I'm assuming that if they wrote, they'll call at some point.
I'm rolling mine right now.
Yeah, you're doing what? You're ruining it now? What?
I'm rolling it.
Titus is on the board. He says, the early worm gets a last chance.
He gets to meet his maker, huh? Thank you, Titus. Wow, philosophy.
I hated that class. It ruined my brain.
Oh, I love class. Oh,
philosophy.
I wanted to argue with philosophy. It's the greatest thoughts of thoughts of thoughts of thoughts of thoughts. Well, there is no right or wrong. There's only opinion.
You know,
for who is right
and
who is wrong.
Yeah, yeah.
And that depends on your school of thought.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Those who are right or those who are wrong.
Yeah, I think we all want to be a bit of a philosopher, you know. There's something deeper in the
are
words.
We not all philosophers?
Yeah.
I know some really vapid people that can't carry a thought in their head, so I don't think they philosophize.
But they think they philosophize.
I don't know if it's an expression that I'm familiar with. You can lead a man to wisdom, but you can't make him think.
Ain't that the truth? Oh, Titus is all like, love you all. That's my moral. That's a good moral, Titus. I'm with you.
We got Titus on
board. Speak with the ignorance.
Okay,
the ignorance within yourself.
I got a question.
Some people have an inner child. I've got an inner idiot.
And we can't seem to shut
up. The things that stay inside aren't what worry me. It's everything that comes out. That's what you got to watch out for.
And sometimes it's too small to be out on its own.
Yeah,
I got a question.
Dances in the rain.
Don't talk about your
first. I got a question.
Yes, Catter.
What do you have to do to have the word philosopher after your name? What do you have to do to be a philosopher?
Buy business cards.
Yeah, it's not possible.
What is it? One of those idiots actually had his first name legally changed to Doctor, so he could call himself a doctor. And I'm not talking about Dr. Phil. It was some other guy that was literally a doctor, and then he got told that he can't practice. So he actually changed his name to Doctor, so he could call himself Doctor.
Some doctors are very anal about being called Doctor. They want to be called Doctor.
And philosophers tend to have a PhD in philosophy, so they are technically doctors.
Huh?
Am I a half doctor then? Can I be doctor half? Half doctor half? I only made it halfway through my doctorate, so am I half doctor?
Half doctor?
Half doctor?
What about
half doctor? My dad was a minister, but they're ordained.
I'm a minister. I got papers.
And then you're an ordained minister. My father went to school and became a minister, but he technically had to be ordained by a church to become a minister, or by the internet. You can be the church of the streets,
something like that.
Yeah, because you can be licensed minister, you can be an ordained minister. So there are certain things that you can be. You can be blessed by the church as a priest. You can go to college and get a degree in ministry, and you can be an ordained minister by a church.
Yeah. But I can marry you.
I could marry you, but not perform the ceremony. Although I guess that would be adultery at this point. Anyway, now we're so far out in left field, we're coming around the right side.
Yeah. Well, the moral of the story is...
It's not who marries, it's careful who you marry.
Yes. Well, he said I could marry you, so, you know, that is obviously open to interpretation. He could marry you as in performing the ceremony, or marry you as in get it down on one knee and marry you.
I don't know.
Close to you.
But, you know, again, that would be adultery, unless you're a Mormon. You're not Mormon, are you, sweetie?
My mind went to love is in the air, and now I've got that junk in my head, so my mind is all over the place tonight. So if we're talking morals.
Yes.
My mind goes Poe because it's spooky season and it's all the telltale heart and ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. That's better than Catholic guilt. Let me tell you what. That story was the best. I think my mom read it to me when I was like 9 because she used to read us poetry in the rain. Whenever there was stormy, so it was dark out, she would like hijack me and my sister. And sometimes it was sad stuff. Sometimes it was love stuff. But on stormy, stormy nights or afternoons when it's dark anyway, she would go full Poe. So it was like 9, and she's all boo-boo. And it like was like the best, creepiest thing ever.
You know.
Of course,
you always
talk about the different. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, go ahead. You're probably going to say the same thing I was just saying.
No,
the
go ahead.
Between...
No, I doubt it.
Oh yeah, were you going to say the difference between Catholic guilt and Jewish guilt and what's the other one? There was another one that was involved in that, but you know, yeah.
No, not at all.
Oh, okay.
How come everybody thinks we're full of guilt? I didn't do anything.
Yeah.
No,
who owns the guilt?
I think all of us own our own guilt.
Yeah, seriously.
No,
but
I wasn't going to say that at all.
Where were you going?
I was going to say, now the key to talking about the moral guilt or moral obligations is what is the fine line between moral obligations versus ethical obligations, because there are a lot of people that violate ethical obligations, yet they don't cross the line of moral obligation. So we also have that gray little line, too. So you have morals and you have ethics. So where are you on that line?
Yeah, well, you could open up a real can of worms if you mentioned, what was it, assisted suicide. That was exactly the point of what you're talking about, the argument that they wanted to bring up, if it's morally or ethically. Yeah, we could talk all night about that one, but we're not going to.
But we're not.
Dr. Kevorkian. Wow. Anyway, so I think we might as well launch into a little poetry and open up with one of our most loyal contributors. We got an audio for our dear friend on the board, Mr. Titus.
We do. Put him up. Let me know when you guys see him.
You'll be waiting a long time.
Let me know when anybody else can see him. He's on the board. I'm gonna go ahead and hit play. Here we go.
The meaning of life as we know it. Dedicated to Osama Chiba, a well-respected poet. The meaning of life. Poetic license, literally, is a quizzical look at life. If to spark redundant with some flawless ideas, fallacious shape, this change somehow rectifies standing hold. Terrific use of the word observe. If to unpack auspiciousness to indicate the result, excessive thinking will observe you lurid insight. Ordinary thinking, a prolapse without any insight to imagine the internal dilemma retrieved in life. From thinking how so many lifeless forms result, such as people in a flash cannot account ideas to necessitate giving, a sad reminder we observe all living, taking from this spate a cycle rectifies. Rare to think to disparage someone who rectifies urge to remain grey while regret sues insight. It is to display an inexpensive means to observe, with explicit ease in which to tease a simple life. It needs excitement to believe the air holds ideas, oxygenating youth in as much truth is as the result. Don't be a cabbage, listen. You are this as a result of being smaller than you think. This earth rectifies the orange, your whole being in stature, the ideas pledge vanity, but your sanity, my friend, is insight. It's incurable to all ills to be nothing outside of life. To remain as someone you should not be, observe. Diversely free to be cautious, yet let's not observe change too much. Walk, but don't jog for the result that as a stranger, gradual change will spring to life. Like nature needs to badge a season, what it rectifies is time. Needing to be useful, it duly helps an insight to bring to life. Divergent ways to bring new ideas. The book you are is to bring out the diffident ideas, each chapter adaptable to change. One will observe the countable layers which nature resolves as insight, needed to make escapable as bare necessities result. For each occasion, the new beginning it so rectifies. Remaining to be cautious holds this meaning of life. Give with kindness to observe goodness as the result of changing others. Their insight undeniably rectifies this meaning of life without you sharing these ideas.
Wow. That was amazing, Titus. I really appreciate the ideas in this. You really spoke to my warped mind. I don't know if that makes you as warped as me, or but I this is just phenomenal. We were talking earlier. I don't even know if we were on the air when we mentioned being philosophers and whatnot. But yeah, there's a lot of ideas and philosophy in this, and you know, to talk about the meaning of life like that, and share the idea of sharing those ideas. Now I'm going to really go down some rabbit hole somewhere, but you said it so eloquently, I mean. Yeah, I just enjoy your writing very much. Thank you for sharing it tonight, Titus. This was absolutely brilliant and a perfect piece to open up with, I think. Great job. Not that it means anything coming from me. Sweet Pea, what'd you think?
Calling on me first. it's definitely something that I will be very honest with you that I have to read and absorb. Titus's work really sometimes makes me sit back and I have to take in and read a few times to really absorb it. You know, I got to tell you, one of my favorite lines in here is, don't be a cabbage. Listen, you are this result of being smaller than you think. This earth rectifies. The orange, your whole being in stature, the ideas. Pledge vanity, but your sanity, my friend, is insight. It's incurable to all ills to be nothing outside of life, to remain as someone you should not be, observe. I really kind of honed in on that stanza, and I want to study it. I want to listen to it. I want to, you know, dwell on it. It fascinates me. And I'm not quite sure why. Listen, I love the verbiage. I love what it's saying to me. It's caught my eye. And it's going to be something that I'm looking at for a little bit. So once again, Titus, thanks to you for intriguing me, making me think, making me move and get my brain going. You always fascinate me. And this is one of those things that's going to fascinate me for a little bit. So thank you, sir, for bringing out... A little more curiosity in me like you do. I greatly appreciate your writing and your style and things that you do.
Yeah, and that verse that you grabbed too, he mentions the word absurd. You know, I love that thought more than anything because, you know, that's also a point of view thing. You know, some people find it some things absurd. Other people embrace it and fold their lives around it. So that's a beautiful word to find in the middle of a poem about the meaning of life and philosophy. You know, so that also kind of comes back to understanding too. I could probably go on. Hatter, what'd you think of Titus's piece?
You know, the word observe, you know, is highlighted throughout. I think I got it. It's the question is why are we here? At some point, we all ask that question when we get to that point of knowledge or wisdom. And then he explains it. It's what we see all around us. It's nature. It's the faces you meet. It's the voices you listen to. But to observe it all. I mean, to observe it. I probably got it wrong, but I'm trying to interpret best I can.
Oh, there are so many, many, many things. First of all, this poem is about three times as long as what you heard. It's a sestina and 12 two-verse variation octaves. And so for anyone listening, I click on it and read it, and it's really quite amazing. And right after the cabbage, and I love the don't be a cabbage. I'm going to just have to steal that and just say that in my everyday life because it's not something that we say here that often, but I will now because that's just fabulous. But it's excellent advice. And I'm loving the diversely free to be cautious, you know, which to me is not at all freedom. You know, yeah, let's not observe change too much. Walk, but don't jog for the results. You know, I love that. Don't be too eager. But this whole poem, as beautifully written as it is, and I love your word choices, Titus, I do, from where is it? Where's the word? Space. You don't hear that very often for that love for all living, that large group of people taking from this state. It's just you use the most eloquent verbiage that I just love. But this speaks to me of not only the whole do unto others, but kind of be the change you want to see. And, you know, and you can't really expect something for nothing. If you're not going to do anything, you know, you can't expect there to be change. But at the same time, don't be an idiot. You know, don't dive in head first before you notice if there's any water in the pool, you know? So, you know, I absolutely love that. I do. But it's just so eloquent and so lovely. And I don't know that I enjoy reading Titus as much as I do reading him while listening to the cadence of his voice and the soothing way his voice has that lilt to it that just kind of pulls you in and wraps you up in his words. It just adds something to it. Not that your words alone aren't lovely because they are just gorgeous. But I don't know. I just enjoy listening. I just really, really do. And y'all need to go back and read all 24 stanzas that are left behind this because he's amazing.
Did we send him a number from the studio so that he could call in? Because I can't imagine having a conversation with him, like actually commenting. It would be totally distracting. I don't think the show would go anywhere.
I'm not sure. Oh, I didn't even check the board. He, to your comment suite, he said, and he said, exactly, Hatter. So, there's that. I'm sorry that I'm behind the times reading it. I was all wrapped up in the poem. So I didn't go back to the page.
So I got it right.
Apparently. So that's awesome. And He's in England, so he's 5 hours ahead of us. But I'm happy, Titus, if you ever want a direct link to call in from your computer, just send me your email. Just DM me your email, and I'll send you a link for any show you want to call in on.
Yeah, I'd be really giddy to hear him.
Yeah, he says
actually,
it's 4:34, so no phone in. Yeah, I'm incoherent at 4:30 in the morning, so I hear you. I mean, I'm sure you're more coherent than I am.
I appreciate you taking the time and being up for us, Titus. I really do, and for writing for that matter. Oh, that means a lot. It really does. I guess I'm being a little selfish, you know. It's like I get to hear this. I get to hear the audio clip, but now I want to have a conversation.
Oh, always, you know, and you don't always want to pick the brains of everybody, but sometimes you want to know, you know, you want to,
It's exactly what you were saying about his word choices. You know, that's not by accident. I'm sure he doesn't sit there with the dictionary going, I want a better word for that. These are words that he uses, you know, interchangeably almost every day. So, you know, to have a conversation with someone, you know, that's going to use the words in casual conversation, it elevates the level of conversation, which is what made me think of, you know, oh, we need him to actually call in.
I'm telling you. He kind of needs his own show.
Thank you. Oh, my God, that would be a coup and a half. we put it on in the afternoon our time.
Right? I put Sweet Pea up on the board.
Awesome. All right, sweet. The microphone is yours. Literally, actually.
Are you on mute?
Sweetness.
I'm on mute, sorry. I'm on mute. This is Revolution to Absolution. Ah, sorry. And Pretty Bird, you have to say this man's name because I cannot say his last name to save my life.
This is Leo Tolstoy.
Right, thank you. And the quote is, everyone thinks of changing the world, but no one thinks of changing himself. So, I walked in solitude, reaching for invisible hands. Mirror fragments shine as I fell backward into Alice's wonderland. Mocked skies blue to surrender to a pouting, distraught mood. Saw the teardrops run down cherub cheeks into a forsaken dry land. Ocean waters erase the footsteps of history imprinted on the sand. Glass bottles held notes that drifted through the hourglass of time. Disemboweled memories of the near smiles painted on sad clowns. Pain surfaced in latitudes and longitudes, slicing into my ivory skin, marching in my revelation towards restitution for my absolution in time and poem.
Yeah, that was you that said, aren't we all philosophers? Oh, wow. I like your brand of philosophy. And I love the quote that you picked. I didn't realize that was – you know, you hear people's names sometimes bandied about, as they say. But, you know, when you actually can associate it with a specific quote sometimes, it's really very eye-opening, you know. And I hate the Internet for that because there's, like, certain quotes out there that are attributed to, like, 12 different people. And it's like, well, who really said it? You know, it's really frustrating because you want to give them the proper credit, you know. And then there's the ones that were imagined or attributed to someone because, you know, it sounds like something they would have said. And, you know, that they're happy to take the credit for it, but they'll readily admit, well, you know, I never really said that. There was one by Groucho Marx that I'm not going to repeat, but it's just like, you know, it's brilliant, but, you know, unfortunately he didn't actually say it. So, but yeah, that idea irritates me because, and you know, I blame the Internet for that. But you know, what is it? Citations? Is that, prove your citations.
Something
damn it.
Like that.
Yeah. But you know, back to your poem, sweet. You know, you've got the idea of change wrapped up in this in you know, sweet pea fashion. I think there's the requisite level of darkness and sadness in it. And you know, I always want to, well, not so much because of what you write half the time, but you know, the emotion that you put behind it, I think, is what speaks to me. It's beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hatter, can you comment for sweet?
Hatter, are you muted?
I'm muted. Yeah.
See that sweet piece?
Yeah, I love the mention of Wonderland, of course. But it went, Sweet Pea, all dark, and was disemboweled memories of veneer smiles and painted on sad clouds. Disemboweled memories. Like a shiver up your spine. And, of course, a revelation toward restoration of my absolution in time. What does it mean? Very good. Dark. Philosophizing. Ocean world water. Erase the footsteps. Where's the bottle? Or the glass bottles held notes. Who's thrown a bottle with a note in it in the ocean?
I don't know.
Okay. Find the bottle to find out.
Right.
I found maybe three and called a litter bug.
That's I've ever found. Not that I live on the beach, but, you know, I remember being a kid looking at the maybe I'll find a note in a bottle.
Maybe.
Yeah, they've done that with balloons and with the name of a kid and the phone number, and sometimes it travels across the damn country.
Yeah. I'm the kid that picked up the shell on the beach and got pinched in the ear by a crab.
Oh. Better than your nipple.
Pretty bird. They charge extra for that. Pretty bird. Can you comment on sweet?
Yeah, Hatter just got me sideways. That was hysterical.
Well,
oh,
you know, if you put in shells on your chest, it's an algae bra.
OMG. Oh, and you can't hear too good that way. Oh, my sweetness, my sweetness. Mock a sky's blue to surrender to a pouting, distraught mood. You know, I'm not the peppiest of folks. And I know many people that just like to be peppy in my face, like their peppiness is contagious, but it ain't that kind of disease. And they're like, the sun is shining, the sky is blue, it's a beautiful day, how are you not so happy? I'm like, the weather has nothing to do with my mood. My favorite day, I sleep in storms because they're soothing. So your sunshine is my sleep bath. It is not okay. And so I love this. I love that it's a beautiful day, and still, you know, it's like it's mocking you because you feel so broken. And that whole disemboweled memory, so there's nothing like the evisceration of truth that gets you in the guts, that and you know, that whole last stanza, it breaks me, you know, because it's all pain and worry and inner contemplation, and it ages you. That whole line of the latitudes and longitudes, you know, it does. Any kind of stress, any kind of extended, deep, emotional, traumatic, anything, it ages you, you know? And you, even if it's only temporary, while you are in it, it does something to the way you look, even when you smile. And it takes a lot to get through that and perk everything back up, you know. And this was just wonderfully vivid. It really, really, really was. You know, I walked in solitude reaching for invisible hands. Oh, I love that. I do. That, I almost want to take that and be like, okay, use this line as inspiration and write from there, you know, because it can lead into about 1,000 different things, and all of them start wistful. So I absolutely love this. And it's a hard thing to sit there inside the annals of your mind, and mine's a scary place. Nobody wants to be stuck in the annals of my mind, and try to change your perspective, your actions, your processes, especially because we can all get wrapped up in the overthinking, and to try to extricate logic from emotion is painful and tedious, and it wears on you. And sometimes it doesn't feel like it's helping at all, and I absolutely love this.
I actually reached for invisible hands once, if I can may explain. I was being wheeled into surgery for brain tumor, and the anesthesiologist was there, and they. I look up and it's a damn theater. It's one of those where they have seating.
Oh, I hate those. I could not.
So it sort of freaked me out. I was trying not to, you know, get anxious or nothing, the best I could. So when I shut my eyes and I knew the anesthesiologist was going to knock me out, I just raised my hand, just reaching for somebody, and eventually a nurse grabbed it. It sort of hit, reaching for empty hand. I mean, that's what I felt like. I mean, that was just needed to hold somebody's hand when he went under.
There's something comforting about holding somebody's hand. And, you know, that's the inherent sadness in reaching for one that's not there. You know,
it seems like I needed it to go through the surgery. I was right at the end. I got real anxious and I just needed to touch. Somebody cut, you know, hold my hand.
Beautiful, sweet pea.
Thank you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for bringing that tonight.
You're welcome. And I'm going to say goodnight.
I'm
exhausted, you guys. But I'm going to say goodnight because I am exhausted. In a long couple of days. But I love you all.
Love you.
See you in your dream.
Looking for redemption can be exhausting. Love you, hon.
Love you guys. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Good night.
Good night, sweetheart.
Good night, guys.
So where do you want to go next?
I actually found a better one, so... I'm going to read an old one. I think it's more of a...
You sure you're not going to change your mind? I'm more than happy to play it, but, you know, you're going to read it, and then you're going to be like, I should have picked the other one. You want a little bit?
Maybe you guys have heard. I started as an altar boy.
I don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember you did.
Okay, cool. It's kind of sort of a moral to the story.
Is that what we're putting up now?
Oh. That's when I put up in the group.
I figure, you know, if you can wait till like Deb calls or when one person calls in, but it's up to
I'll
you.
Wait.
If you want to now,
yeah.
I'll throw you up
wait.
Now.
I didn't mention
okay.
that to jump in line. No, go ahead and.
We had another SoundCloud or
Okay, now this is a YouTube thing, so I may have to redo it because Blog Talk does not like YouTube.
YouTube is playing with copy protection, that's why.
Well, YouTube
but
is a pain in the butt, but we'll see if it works.
Yeah.
So it's on the board, and I'm gonna hit play, and hopefully it works.
Hubristic Hacho Dies in Death Star Steamroll by Steven 76. of unkempt promises and planetary debris, silencing millions of screams. Governor of metallic moon and quiet sea, unknowingly ripping at seams. Spiced pastry princess purgers, abandoned sight, a deferral drive. Gibbet of grace is ordered post-haste, although falcon invaded the hive. A rooked rescue of roses to trail the peregrine pass. Quash the rebellion as it dozes, rule the galaxy in mass. Hubris holds for master stroke, exhaust port Achilles heel, blurring down equator trench. Sarcastic cowboy sends Vader to reel. He who walks among the clouds gets a huzzah and descent. Grand Moff watches numbers drizzle, Death Star and tattered rent. End poem.
I love that
planet. That's not a planet.
This is a great piece. You know, Star Wars wants to be a lot of things, but I don't know that they were specifically, I guess they were looking for morals, huh? There's a lot of philosophy and morals in Star Wars. Like we've been talking, you know, you find it all over the place if you just look. The rhyme was great. The story was true to the movie. You could tell, you know, even though you have Death Star in the title, you almost didn't need it from the description of, you know, destroying worlds. I thought it was a great piece, Stephen. Continue to enjoy your work. Bravo. What'd you think, Hatter?
Yeah, this is the Reader's Digest of the movie. Says it all. I like
cool.
The ending. The Grand Moff Munch's numbers drizzle, Death Star in tattered rent. Yeah.
It's got a nice flow to it,
That's not a moon. Is that what he says? Or that's not a planet. No, that's not a moon. When you first see the Death Star, that's not a moon.
Yeah. Pretty Bird, what'd you think?
Okay. So I love. So this is all tickling my little nerve endings. Spiced pastry princess, you know.
I love
her cinnamon buns. And that is just the best thing ever. So this thing made me smile. It made me smile. It made me smile. It made me smile. I absolutely love this. I do. Hubristic honcho dies in Death Star steamrolled. It's like it's a headline in a futuristic newspaper, you know? It's like it's today's current events, you know? It's absolutely flipping fabulous. And I love all things Star Wars. So this is just amazing, absolutely amazing. And it starts with, you know, of unkept promises and planetary debris, silencing millions of scream. Governor of metallic moon and quiet sea, unknowingly ripping at the seams. You know, I love that until the thing explodes, they think that it's like impenetrable. But they have the plans. They should know the weaknesses of the things that they built. You know, so that always drove me just a wee bit nuts. Like, yeah, nobody can hit that until somebody does, you know, but I absolutely love that. I do. This made me absolutely smile. It did. I'm saving it because I have to, because it's Steven and it's Star Wars and it's fabulous.
I think Spaceballs spells it out, tells the story.
Listen. Okay, Spaceballs has had me up to my eyeballs in everything being a Schwartz and my kids fighting each other with it. It is not okay.
I think that's the funniest Mel Brooks is with Spaceballs. I think it just made me laugh all the time.
He didn't look Jewish.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm a mug. I'm my own best friend. Anyway,
yeah. Was his name is Colonel? His Lieutenant Asshole.
Yep.
Private Asshole. Well, he's an asshole too. He's his brother. An asshole too.
Who else we got? There was another audio clip, right?
You.
Oh, I thought there was a different one. Sorry. And then Crystal might call, Deb might call, AP might call. So
I thought I saw AP call in earlier, but it dropped before it registered. So hopefully they'll try to call back.
I called.
Yes, you did.
We connected.
Okay.
And we have one to be read by Lockdown Larks. Are you up for reading? Are you able to read him today? Hatter, are you okay with that?
I can surely try.
That is awesome.
Okay.
I don't pre-read, so I have no clue what's in it. But he is on the board. Do you mind that I threw him up there, Rex?
No. That was actually what I was thinking of. I thought it was an audio, but yeah, that's exactly the direction I wanted to go. Perfect.
Okay. God darn it. See, reading Stevens?
No.
Not Stevens.
Refresh. It's Lockdown Larks.
Yeah. Okay, there it is. Lockdown Larks. Okay. I think I can do this. Peer pressure. His daughter is smiling. How do you say that word? Bedouin?
Good enough.
Bedouin? This Bedouin full of trust. But she is so big. Now, you better read it.
I can do that. Let me.
Thanks, Adam.
Yeah, I have no clue how to pronounce that word either, to be honest with you.
No worries.
Okay, this is Peer Pressure by Lockdown Larks, and I'm just going to apologize now if I'm going to stumble all over myself. His daughter is smiling, this Bedouin full of trust, but she is so beguiling in her bed, and bed her I must. Oh my. Fair lady, enchantment I see, would you care to dance? Kind sir, you honor me, I'm grateful for a chance. Can we love forever and forget never? She moves with such grace, matching his swing and sway, and as they embrace, they merge into a ballet. She agrees to retire to passions of the night, fulfilling his desire before he drifts into twilight. Can we love forever and forget never? Pierre awakes to thoughts of bliss. He moves to caress, but no one there to kiss, looking around, just emptiness. Outside, there's nothing. All possessions gone, even missing his gold ring, just the clothes he has on. A love forever is now never. So abandon, he learns, it is often the way to take what one yearns. There may be a price to pay. And poem.
Oh, that's lovely. You know, the whole idea of grifting and you know, I want to believe in taking total advantage of that. And, you know, one person embraces it and the other person has that ulterior motive, you know, as being, you know, that's a fantastic story, Lars. You did an amazing job with that. You couldn't have done better, I don't think. I really enjoyed it. You know, the idea of it, the story of it, but, you know, the truth of it, too. And, you know, it kind of still happens to this day, too. to lose someone standing there with nothing but the clothes on their back, you know. He left me $5 for socks, you know. It's just, wow. And you did a great job with the rhyme and flow, too. You know, you stayed. It was a great story. It was a great story. You know, and there's a lot of layers to the thought behind it, too. It was perfect for a moral situation, you know. You're following your heart and things like that, even. I mean, there's a lot to this. Hatter, what'd you see?
Yeah, it definitely. It's the story where one party invests it all, and the other doesn't. And when the abandonment happens, what makes you mad is that it was planned. a certain feeling of the abandonment and then fooled by the heart. You were blind because of the heart.
He's got the spooky season for Pretty Bird, because I know you're going to bring up the lust and the temptation and the other things that are hiding in this. Go ahead, Pretty Bird.
Well, yeah. You know, there's something to be said for that instant attraction. And, you know, guys are more visual than girls are. Not that girls don't like a pretty face, but they tend to fall for underlying things more deeply than that visual thing that catches a guy's eye, you know, which is why we have to be all pretty, because we have to outdo each other. She's so beguiling that, you know, when you must have somebody that when you're attracted that way, that kind of animal, primal, I must have kind of way, and things work out well. And, you know, whether you fall in love before you fall in lust or fall in lust before you fall in love, when those two finally merge, it's a powerful thing. And to wake up one morning after it's, can we love forever and forget never? Can you be the love of my life? And they're on the same page for a hot minute. When you wake up and the dream turns into a nightmare, it is heartbreaking. And it's not something that you forget. I mean, that's a tough lesson to learn. And it changes who you are. You know, it's one of those things kind of, they change us. And even if we want to be all the glasses half full, it's tempered by that pain. So it's never freely full. It's not that free-flowing kind of ready to trust. And so pain like that, it changes a person, despite how much we try to say it doesn't.
Yeah. He did a good job with that. He really did. There's so many aspects of that kind of a relationship, even, because, you know, you could take it literally, like, you know, he was being set up and grifted, and you could take it more, you know, philosophically, like, well, you know, he went into it and he fell in love with her, and, you know, he was all about, we're going to have, our children will be beautiful. And then, you know, she took him for everything he had, you know. I don't know. I could see so many different angles to this. I thought it was lovely and layered and deep.
Hey, Freebird.
Yes.
Thank you for the slow down, check ahead while you read, pause at Crest.
What?
I wasn't sure where it was going.
When you were reading.
I wasn't really sure where it was going to go. None of us read it ahead, so I thought I didn't notice the pause.
Yeah, I tend to not. Well, I had to make sure it was PG-13, because it's when I don't stop to check, things go sideways.
Yep. I'm supposed to look at those things. Cool.
I've even done it to myself. I'm like, look, this one's innocent. Oh, no, it wasn't. My bad. So sorry.
I can't read this.
Yeah.
Cool. Sometimes people show you something that you don't get to preview it anyway.
Yeah.
That's funny. So it is just after midnight. So why don't we go over the upcoming shows? Because I know you have a show tomorrow night. It's the Man Cave is on tomorrow, right?
Yeah, I've got the Man Cave. We're doing a little Halloween scare. Chatting about a little break from poetry. But if you do want to read the Halloween one, you can call in. Anyone happy
awesome.
To have you do that?
I can't find a topic for Saturday. Is there a show on Saturday?
Yeah, that's the – well, AP is out of town. He's going to be not – so if it's not the three of us, we don't do the show usually. So I think I'll just postpone it for next week.
And on Sunday – well, yeah, I like Saturday's topics. They always make me think. I don't get to write a whole lot because I'm not in the best. My brain ain't working, but but I do enjoy them. And Sunday for our 18 and over people. We have a sister group called the Adult Lounge, and we are doing the Sin of Lust. We are, because it's naughty night on Sunday at 10. So feel free to head on over there. We need your age and whatnot to get in. And then it is a private show where we call, we read, we talk. It's fun. So that is on Sunday. And then Monday is Halloween. It's Halloween. And it is Personal Prop Monday with Miss Deborah Lee. And let us see, because I haven't looked at anything because I am awfully behind. And we have, oh, she's got some really spooky images. Oh, that's fabulous. So if you want to be creeped out and you love spooky season, oh, it's the thing. I don't know what that thing is, but I almost bought one. It's she has a picture of one of those like weird ragdoll scarecrow old baby doll looking things that's like in a little like orange onesie, but it's like all like old potato sack. And they're just so cute, and because I'm not creepy, it's fine. But they're, to me, they're absolutely adorable. And I almost bought one at Spirit Halloween like 2 weeks ago, except for a 14-inch tall one. They wanted like $69. I said, I can make this out of scraps. No, thank you. But I would have bought it if it was like, you know, $20. But I might have to grab that. My kids were all like, why do you think that's cute? That's not cute. It's creepy. No, it's adorable. I love her. Because, everything is a her to me since I got a girl dog. Don't ask me. But so that is fabulous. Check that out because she's got awesome, awesome, awesome Halloween spookiness for Halloween night. So that is awesome. All right, Rack, back to your poetry.
Now I'm stuck on the orange baby doll. It sounds like you're describing Chucky a little bit. From childhood.
Did you say something, Hannah?
I'll tell you a secret.
Mm-hmm.
Lust is only a sin when it's somebody else.
Well,
there's a philosophy I can embrace.
Here's the thing. On all of the cardinals, on all of the seven deadlies, because, you know, it's Hell Week. So on all of the seven deadlies, in small quantities and in within the right parameters, I don't think that any of it's a sin. I know, blasphemous, I'm horrible. But, you know, it's one thing to have pride in your work and pride in this. It's another thing to be completely flipping conceited or whatnot. It's one thing to be fueled to want better things for yourself. It's another thing to be completely covetous and not work towards your own goals just because and just complain that somebody else has more than you. It's one thing to be able to want more money, to be able to afford a better life for your kids, you know, than to just be like money, 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 like at the end of the world. So in small doses and in the right quantities, you know, like small doses and not where it's not going to completely take over your life. I don't find any of it sinful. I mean, lust. I mean, not for nothing. How are we supposed to, you know, procreate if we don't want the sex? You know, so I think that when it comes to the seven deadlies, it's very much if it completely consumes you, if it takes you out of your care for other people.
When it separates you from your spirituality and yourself, you're in something that takes over.
It's misunderstood.
Well, it's not that it's misunderstood, and it's not that it's just.
and to give back, be able to give back, donate, because you have it so well.
Now that is now the seven virtues, and that's that has no place in Hell Week, because Hell Week is all sin and darkness and whatever. But and you know. I kind of like sloth, not for nothing, but if I, well, back when I was like running around crazy, not so much now, but when I was running around crazy and I was working most 7 days a week because you get paid double time for your seventh day, and I was just all about that. Well, why the heck not? I'm not doing anything else.
Yeah,
when I finally did, what? Yeah, but when I finally
did get a day off,
I was doing nothing. Okay. I was going to sleep. I was not putting on clothes. I was going to be in my jammies. I'm going to be hanging around the house doing not a gosh darn thing, because I think that after working 2 weeks straight, I deserve a day of nothing. And and that to me is it's not the same as living in your jammies every single day doing nothing at all, but you know, for like a month. It's different.
That wouldn't be sloth. That would be enjoying a day off. But if you had made it a habit of doing that, then that would could turn into it. It's just an excessive term, I believe.
Right. I see that. That's everything in small doses. But and it's you know what I think is an interesting thing. Not to be all off on a side shoot, but since I went all seven deadlies. Why is it, these are all personality flaws. These are all personal things, but, and these are like sins of the highest order, i.e. cardinal, deadly, whatever. Why the heck is it more deadly for it to, I guess it's going to, you know, damn you to hell if you're all, you know, whorish, but murder ain't on that list, so I can go around and kill 10 people and be like, oh, my bad, I'm sorry, and be okay. That this does not fly with me. You know, I'm good with a little lust.
Say that again.
What?
Say that again.
Why isn't murder one of the seven deadly sins is basically what she just said.
Basically, yes.
Oh. Well,
you could go out and get your groove on, but you can't go out and kill the annoying neighbor.
Yeah, because they're not. I think the seven deadly sins are an inner thing. I understand what you're saying. I understand the question. Yeah, I understand the question. I guess maybe it's not a commandment. I don't know.
Well, these are rules to live by, and the other ones are sins, but they're all sins. Everything is a sin.
Yeah, but you don't have to explain it in a manner of that detail, I don't believe. I mean, that's like having a sin for killing baby seals. That's a sin. But only if you...
Not if you eat it.
Say when were they written? Is that an old Testament? Seven deadly sins?
I don't know. I'm Catholic. It's just indoctrinated. And we have a caller. Hey, Crystal, is that you?
It's me.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well.
Crystal.
We're going a little sideways on the seven deadly sins, so that's what you walked in case you were wondering.
I just heard something about the Old Testament, and I was like, wait. And then I heard you saying you were Catholic, and then I was like, what did I walk into?
This is Bible study.
Oh, no, because I've been doing a real bad job of it. Let me tell you what.
Thank you for interrupting. How you doing, Crystal?
Doing good.
I understand you brought presents.
She did.
Maybe one.
Okay. Well, I'm sure there's more than one little gift within. Would you like?
Okay, I got the answer.
Wants to jump right in. It's up to her.
Hold on a second. Hatter has an answer to which question to why will you go to hell for lust, but you can kill people and say you're sorry.
Why are you?
Which question?
You said you could kill some.
Yeah.
No, the seven deadly sins. Seven deadly sins, where they came from, where it came from.
Uh-huh.
And it says that the seven deadly sins were first enumerated, then eight in total, by the Christian ascetic Evagrius Pontus in a 4th century CE. What was that? 4th century CE. His work articulated the monastic consensus rooted to the Hellenistic cosmology, which identifies seven or eight pl- planets that they guarded by corresponding aerial spirits. So the subdivisions correspond with planets too? I didn't know that. Odd.
Doesn't get included.
So, and then they were re-mentioned, they were mentioned 4th century. That was after that CD. That'd be interesting.
Well, Crystal, that shouldn't be too hard to follow. We have your link up on the board.
I think I got it.
I'm going to take a
No, that's not what I meant. I meant that you were coming up after him, not that you would still. Oh, God, no. Am I that bad? Don't insult all my listeners like that. Are you that? No. No.
I knew what you meant. I was teasing on that one. I did know what you meant.
No, I appreciate that kind of humor. It's like, you know, seriously, now I feel bad. Okay. Do we have her link up?
Yeah.
Whenever you're ready, Crystal.
Okay. I have a lot of poems on life, but I didn't exactly know what to go with, but I just grabbed a random one. So this is called An Understanding of Confusion. I know you don't understand. I don't understand either. I just felt what I did was right, and that's all I could do. Yes, scrambling thoughts and pointless drops welled inside me, but yet again, here we are. Nothing could be done. It was an unfinished and confusing mess, echoing pressure in my mind. It had to be dealt with. And yes, maybe there are regrets, though we do not endure and flush ourselves in that. Only time will tell when maybe I'll be able to understand why and what I did. And I hope one day you'll understand too.
Wow. But there was a song when I was growing up. I don't know if you would have heard it. I'm not even sure what the title of it was, but the one verse that always echoed in my brain, I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. That there's nothing to me that's worse than, like, you know, you're trying to do the right thing or whatever, and someone looks at it and they're like, you know, takes it out of context or just doesn't understand what you were trying to say, you know, whether you're doing it for the right reasons or whatever. You know, that there's no feeling that alienates someone more than that. And then, you know, for me, there's another little underlying thing that just my brain can't comprehend either. It's like, you know, you said that you knew me, you said that you understood me or whatever, so how could you think that I would do that to you if it would hurt you? And, you know, that gets wrapped up in there, and it turns into this whole explosive, yeah, you brought a good one. that was excellent, Crystal. There's a lot of layers to the thought behind, you know, a simple misunderstanding isn't so simple, you know. It could turn into this whole nightmare of, you know, catastrophe. Beautiful job with that. Hatter, what'd you think?
I think there's a you're trying to let it all out, and you haven't yet. Something to that matter. It felt a very personal need or want. I hope you will understand too. It's just it's not a hopeless feeling, but it's a reality, I guess.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Pretty good observation.
I'm a philosopher.
Pretty bird, can you comment for Crystal? Off the mute button, please.
Oh, yeah.
She may have something else going on in the background, too. Hopefully we didn't lose my eyes.
Oh, she said that Block Talk dropped her and that she'll be back in a second.
Okay.
Oh.
I had problems with Block Talk last night, where at the end of the show, all it was just crackling between me and Hatter, like voices. It was bad.
Yeah.
I hope it's not in the recording. I was going to listen to it. I didn't.
Yeah, sorry I missed your show last night. It was on the rare occasion I had to actually go out and act like I had a life.
I understand that feeling. But no, you actually had quite a few people last night. It shocked me. Because normally I have maybe one or two people that show up, but I have some very, very late shows. So I was happy to see it. Plus, I think everybody likes my topic. They, you know, more Halloween kind of poetry. So,
yeah. Today is Black Cat Day, if I'm not mistaken.
It is. I saw that a few minutes ago.
Okay. All right. I got something to show you guys.
Is it a black cat?
No, pretty close, something like that. Take me a second, see, I think I can grab it. Oh, there it is. Okay.
I'm back.
Hey.
Blog Talk kicked me out, and then it wouldn't let me call back in as a host. So that was fun.
Oh, I hate that. I've had that before.
Yeah, Blog Talk hates me.
Well, we love you.
Yeah. Oh, so, I accidentally put on the comments of Crystal's poem. Let's see,
So it looks like you totally misunderstood.
Which was by The Animals, 1965. It was Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That song, yeah.
It's a good song. The melody is a definite earworm. No. Can you comment on Crystal's poem? Did you
of
hear it?
I can.
Or
yes, I did. I did. It was an unfinished and confusing mess. You know, that particular part. I'm stuck in my own head all the time. So this speaks to me on many levels. Because when you're in there and you're contemplating, and it doesn't matter what it is, but if you're contemplating something you might have done or should have done, what? But when you're stuck in your head and you're contemplating things that you did or should have done or might have done or wanted to do or something somebody else.
Did she just get dropped again?
Sounds like it.
I'm here.
Okay. It cut you off
me?
In mid-sentence. If you got yes,
it
now
did,
we do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Blog Talk is the bane of my existence. So when you get, I will try
somehow
to get you a comment and not sound incoherent. When you're stuck in your own head, which I often am, and you're contemplating all of these things, the shoulda, coulda, wouldas, the maybe if I do this or did that, or maybe they did this for that reason, like we could ever know why anybody really does things, and you're stuck in those places in your head for any little tiny number of things, not even anything big, you know, and you either lash out or don't lash out, or you are in your space and people don't get why you react to things the way you react to things. And, you know, half the time you don't know why you do it yourself. You're not really how often have you barked at somebody when they did nothing? You know, they had the nerve to bother you mid-thought, you know? And so those reactions then spark arguments, and then those arguments make you give you false insight into things that you think that they think of you, because how could they think such things when your mind wasn't in that place? That's just how they took it, because they're in their own mess of the shoulda, coulda, wouldas and possibilities. And, you know, it's kind of like every conversation, only this is why I talk so much. This is why, ask Rack, I will clarify every little stupid thing. Like, I never mean it to be condescending. I just need to be clear because sometimes I'm very clipped, and sometimes if I'm in the middle of doing something and someone's like, hey, should I do this? And I'm just like, yes, no, yes, no. And they're like, are you mad at me? Dude, I'm busy. You know? it has nothing to do with you. I'll talk to you in a minute. You know? So I'm constantly. Yeah, you know, I'm very black and white. Shades of gray and me are not friends, and life is all shades of gray, so I have issues. But I love this because sometimes things just need doing. You do what needs doing. That's how we get through the day. You know, even if it's not things we want to do, because not for nothing, I changed diapers for like 15 years of my life, and I not once did I ever want to change a diaper, but you do what needs doing. And so when it's bigger things or things that are outside of what your personal needs are, you know, things need to be done for the greater good or because it's the right thing to do or for whatever the reason is. And it's not the easiest thing to explain yourself to people, especially when you don't think it needs explaining, number one. And number two, if they don't see things the way you see things, they're never going to understand. You know, when my mom was in the hospital before she passed, I didn't leave her side for 11 days, not because I wanted to sit there, but because she asked me not to leave every time I tried to leave. And so I was there with like a change of clothes for 11 days. It was so gross. And my nephew was very much, you need to go home. You need to sleep like a normal person. And I was like, no, I don't. I need to be here. And it wasn't until they saw that when I tried to leave, my mom would be like, please don't go. Please don't go. I couldn't leave. But until they saw it, they thought I was like some like crazy, like whatever the heck that, you know, I'm like, no, believe me, this is not where I want to be 24 hours a day. you know, but you can't explain things to people that just aren't in that mindset. And so this took me to a million different places. I don't know if you picked up on that, but it took me all over the place because it's true. It is, you know. I was like, I can't explain it to you if I can't explain it to myself. You know, things, it just has to be this way. So I fully understood this. So you got to love a poem that makes you think.
You understood the poem about understanding. It's very, very, very poetic, Crystal. I really appreciate the subject matter that you chose. It was a great choice for tonight. And in general, when you're talking about, you know, morals and just, you know, life in general, it's just one of those things, like she said, you know, it really gets your brain screwed up because you try and dig into it. You know, there's so many different situations that it applies to. There really are, you know, even, you know, you take this way out in left field. I doubt your mind went in this direction, but you know, somebody that's splitting up, you know, somebody that's divorced, you try and explain to the kids why daddy's leaving, you know, they're never going to understand that's not something that you can really explain very easily. You know, you only can hope when they get older that they'll understand the whole situation, you know, that is, yeah. And it's not even a question of, you know, their ability to comprehend. It's the understanding of life in general, and they just don't have that. It's crazy. Great, great piece. Thank you. So, Hatter, did you settle on one? Did you want to go now, or?
Up to you. Up to you.
Want me to put it up?
Yeah.
I'll see if it's still in my. Yeah, look at that.
Case buffer.
This is sort of a moral of the story. Started as an altar boy. I started as an altar boy in a house of Christian faith. I learned the writings of my Lord that filled me with His grace. One day I was to serve a mass. I thought everything was fine. Busted by Father Hogan, sipping sacramental wine. I think he mentioned it to all the others. For sure, he told the nuns. They made me feel a little bad sticking out their holy tongues. They made me change into a robe from our patron saint. I had to polish all the glass and touch up all the paint. I thought that God might not be in. I hope he had better things to do, and I'm sorry for what's to come because I told him it was you. But if you get to go to heaven, don't worry, I'll be fine. I never made it past the gate, but I get to hold the sign.
That was a clever ending. Oh,
bit of a moral.
There's a story about a guy and his dog, and he goes by the gates of heaven, and they're like, you know, you can't bring the dog in. I was like, well, I don't want to be any place that, you know, they won't allow the dogs. And then down the road, he finds, you know, another sign that says heaven, and he's like, you know, that, you know, I thought I just passed, and they're like, no, that's hell. You know, it's misrepresentation. You know, of course, dogs are welcome in heaven. But anyway, I probably butchered the story, but I like the Peace Hatter. I remember being an altar boy and making a comment about the sacramental wine, and you know the priests. Oh, I don't remember the exact context of it. I just remember that I got in trouble. I tend to do. I was actually just
holding the bottle. I wasn't sipping anything, but I had to embellish it. Just like that, sir, Lord. And I wasn't going, you know. Not a confession.
Crystal,
but yeah,
can you
just
hold
the sign. Heaven this way.
Yeah, I definitely can like see the story in this and everything. I definitely did like chuckle at a couple of things, especially when they were like, they made me feel bad sticking out their holy tongues, and I'm just imagining all these nuns sticking their tongues out. I can't imagine that. Or that, and then the end, like where you're talking about, don't worry, I'm holding the sign. And I mean, to be honest though, holding the sign, I mean, that's a pretty important job probably. So, I mean, it's not necessarily saying that like you're not in. I mean, and when you're maybe done at the end of the day, maybe you, well, actually it wouldn't be the end of the day. You'd be doing it for eternity. But anyway, I just find it to be very, very clever. But I do see what you mean in like story and stuff like that. I know a lot of people can sometimes.
It's sort of my wishfulness that God has a sense of humor.
Oh, I'm
he's the one. What do you think, Pretty Bird?
Sense of humor.
Yes.
He's the one that every time I asked for patience for the child I had, next thing I knew I was pregnant, so I stopped asking for patience. First of all, I love sacramental wine. I mean, before it's all converted into the blood of Christ and whatnot, my priest used to provide us Angelica made by the monks somewhere the heck over somewhere else, and it was by the gallon, because they buy the gallon jugs. And if we were having like a Christmas party or whatnot, he always brought a couple of gallons. Here you go. And I'm all like, woohoo, because A, it's sweet, and I like a sweet wine, and B, it's really strong. You don't expect sacramental wine to be so potent, but it is really strong. So I was just like, well, and it smells like fruits. It's got a very sweet smell to it. So I can absolutely, I mean, I have a bunch of kids, so they've all smelled all kinds of stuff, and usually like, whoo, but no, that sacramental wine smells good. It does. So I get the temptation to be curious, but I absolutely love it. What?
During the ceremony in the mass, there's a part where the father walks over to the head altar boy, and he I have both the wine and the water, and I pour the water in. He immediately raises the chalice. That's his signal that's enough. So I pour the water, and he immediately just pour the wine, and it's like, good, 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 good. Then he goes up and does this, praises the host, and then drinks out of the chalice. And it's, yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
I have a problem with the drinking of the wine in mass at church. I'm good with the wafers. I'm absolutely good with the wafers. But there's like commutes and people are gross. So I'm like, I love you, Jesus, but no.
Yeah, they don't. They don't. That's the old mass. You'd have to be recommend or suggest the old mass to do that.
They did it at my church up until COVID, and I not for nothing. I haven't been back just because
yeah,
I don't trust anybody.
I know it's in the ceremony if you're getting married.
Mm-mm.
In a church.
Every Sunday.
You can have that or not. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can
Every
have
Sunday,
it or not have it, but it's still a communal cup.
Well, we served communion. Yeah, we served the wafers, but
right.
Nobody drank.
And you drank the wine.
You have to have a big-ass straw. Yeah.
Yeah, because they would just take their little thing and wipe it. And I'm just like, no, I will pass. Thank you very much. Jesus understands. Just like I won't touch the wafer. I'm one of those people. I will stick up my tongue. Do not touch my tongue with your finger. Put the thing on there. I have no desire to touch the body of Christ. Once it is all blessed and whatnot, I ain't touching it. So sorry.
But
people are like, just put it in my hand. I'll do it myself. No.
It's symbolic to the...
Figurative.
Yeah, you know, it's like when people say I won't get into it.
Yeah, thank you. I was gonna say that's more about faith thing, but
yeah.
Moving on.
So we have URAC, we have AP, I'm hoping that Deb's going to call, and then me.
Throw me under the bus.
Okay.
What?
And RAC is on the board, and here we go.
Reap what you sow. By raconteur. My mother was known for whipping up potions, so people call me a son of a witch. I hope to one day master alchemy and make my family rich. I have two beautiful sisters, born identical twins. They grew up studying magic and dating handsome djinns. They revel in causing mischief. Like scratching an insatiable itch. Because when it comes time to pay the piper, nobody can tell which witch is which. One full moon, we all went out for a brew, forced to walk because we never learned to fly stick. So we strolled silently, shrouded in shadows, arriving unnoticed in the mood to frolic. Settled only a brief spell, I knew there was going to be trouble. We were told to abandon our drinks and leave on the double. My sisters cursed the tavern, rotting the teeth of anyone that ventured within, plaguing them with gout and herpes sores all over their skin. The difference between a witch and a princess is the love she's shown. Worship the ground she walks on, and you'll reap what you've sown. And
better to have a witch on your side than, you know, have to face one against you. That's for gosh darn sure. But I kind of love this. It made me chuckle. My mother was known for whipping up potions, so call me a son of a witch. But, you know, I had to laugh at the witch's witch just because, you know, I had to. It was that. And, at the one full moon, we all went out for a brew. Nice choice of drink there, by the way. Forced to walk because we never learned to fly stick, which I loved because, you know, witches and broomsticks. And you gotta love Emmanuel is all I'm saying. But I like this. I absolutely like this. Because, you know, the difference between a witch and a princess is the love she has shown. And that stands true with if that W wasn't a W, just because it's human nature. You know, we like to surround ourselves with people who treat us better than we treat ourselves, you know. So I absolutely love this. It's cute. It's absolutely adorable. I like the witchiness and the mention of the herpes because, ew, and I get that all cold sores are herpes, but to have any kind of those very painful, open, blistery sores all over your body is just, yeah, it might as well be leprosy. It's just gross. So, Crystal, what are your thoughts? Oh, Crystal dropped. Okay, so Hatter, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. He didn't go, you know, pus oozing open wound. He went herpes sore. I had to laugh about that. Caught me funny. But yeah, what poet never wanted to go which is which? No, I was just couldn't apply it. No, that was a great line. Good job. Made me smile, man.
Thanks, dude.
Okay, so now we have, I'm hoping Deb calls, and then we have AP and Mindy, that's it.
Let's not do you last minute for a change. Do you want to go next?
Sure. What'd you say, Hatter?
I just saw a rooster's name. On the.
Where?
Oh, it's a comment. Sorry. I thought it was a chat.
I'm like refreshing everything, and I'm like looking for things. Okay, it is on the board, and this is them fighting words. And it goes like
hey,
this. If words weren't weapons or skin-deflected forked tongues, we could all claim superhero status for just existing, which is hard enough in this fallible skin with fallible thoughts and a mind skewed by imperfect emotions. Except pain. Pain is always perfect. Its purity never changes despite the cause or type or duration. It always hurts. Irrational and moody, perception hangs in the wind, trying to balance memories with reflections, and deflection is just well-dressed denial and roles no one ever asked to play. Honesty is my superpower, an epic defense mechanism, a safe harbor for feeling too much. Guarded or defenses down, too open hurts both hunter and prey. Nothing like taking damage and damned if you do, damned if you don't, life lessons and crash courses of minimal sustainability. But I take comfort in the pain. I take comfort in the pain waking behind those who go blind staring at the sun and stars or any light that enlightens the path. It never lets me down. But you did. If words weren't weapons in the mouths of those frightened by difference, life would come in hues of flavor that didn't melt away in the dark. Cradled on tongues, dancing in the rain with no consideration for shelter, because wet is just a state of being and dry is often overrated. Broken armor yesterday's cracked force fields and break trust. But if words weren't weapons, maybe we'd heal. End poem.
Unleash a poet with a poem on words and pain. I really love this, especially considering your opinions on the subject. It's just lovely. The word acerbic comes to mind. There's so much that you talk about emotion-wise, you know, the broken trust and the truth and the sharp tongues and what eventually, you know, as you like to put it, you know, falls out of people's faces sometimes. It really can be so biting. There's so much in this. I really appreciate your ideas. You know, there's probably be a show on its own about pain being perfect. You probably did do a show on pain being perfect, but anyway.
I don't think I have.
Oh boy. I really love this though. You know, you always when you make your point, you do so quite eloquently, and you know, you talk about how you love to over-explain and you just keep going. I think you do just the right amount, you know, because of the ability to misunderstand what people say sometimes. You know, you kind of have to go into detail in a lot of ways, and you do it in a way that is both relatable and understandable. It's fantastic. Hatter, can you comment for Pretty Bird?
Yeah, this reminds me of, I wrote a poem, If the World Had No Eyes, and basically the same kind of story where how if we couldn't see the deceit in people, that kind of the term, and it really paralleled what I was trying to say. It's like, can't remember how my writing or scribbling down. Oh yeah, what's best for us comes, what's worst for us comes free to us. I didn't say that right. What's bad comes free to us. Because we can see the way we do and communicate the way we do and build and invent the way we do is our actually what makes us more parasitic to nature in nature. So in the grand scheme of things, philosophizing here, because I'm a philosophizer, that what makes us superior is what makes us bad. Worse. If that makes sense.
Thank you, Hatter.
You know, it's funny because it's not like I've never lashed out at people. I do. We tend to lash out at those at home, you know, those that we trust enough to not go anywhere that we don't have to watch our tongues with, and they're usually not the ones that deserve it, because we can't lash out at the ones that we want to lash out on. Because you can't tell off your boss without fear of getting fired and whatnot. But sometimes people are harsh. And not only are they harsh, it's when they don't realize they're harsh. That like they think that what they say doesn't matter. Because I have only come across a few people that are actually mean by design, mean all the time, mean natured. Most people are not. And so when they say things that are mean, it's usually from pain or anger, but sometimes it's because they don't realize their words have weight. Like they think that they don't matter and their words don't matter. That happens to me a lot, by the way. Like, I'm like, who the heck am I? Why would they care? And, but it does, you know, which
is it like getting away with that attitude? Cause I know what you're saying and I've never understood it either.
No. I know a lot of people that are very much, they just don't think so highly of themselves that what they say matters, and that they're not trying to be mean. They're just, they say things and they don't get why it would be hurtful. You know what I mean? They just don't understand why, because they, you know what I mean? It's a very odd thing. But it happens more often than you would say. It happens to me all the time because I tend to be curt and like I use hard T's, and then people always read me where people just think I'm a bitch. No lie, they just really do. And they're like, but you're so nice. I'm like, I am. Somebody told me recently and it made me laugh because it was a sweet notion. It was such a sweet notion, but not at all how I would ever see myself. I was told, you don't have a mean bone in your body. Really? Have you met me? But when I think about it, I don't do anything to hurt anybody on purpose. I hurt a lot of people on accident because I'm human, and it falls into that category of you don't realize.
Mama lion.
What?
Mama lion.
Well,
Mother
it's just
lion.
You don't realize that it hurts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I thought I thought you didn't have a mean bone in your body because they all disintegrate.
And you know they know. How can they not? That was
because
a mean thing to
sometimes
say.
They, because when they don't mean it mean, here, I am
stupidly
honest.
Does it just draw attention to their flaw?
No. It's okay. Yeah. If somebody asks me a question, I have come to respond over many, many years of trying to learn a lesson. I have come to respond with, are you sure you want me to answer that? Are you sure you want to know? Are you sure you want to ask me this question? Because I'll tell you.
Well,
it's just, you can't ask me a question of how does this dress look and have me give you an honest answer. Now, I'm not one to be all, you look like a giant turd because that brown dress just washes you out. I'm not that. I'm very much more, well, I prefer the blue on you because it brings out your eyes. But if they're going to push me and be like, so you're saying that I don't look good in this dress. Well, no, you don't look good in that dress. It washes you out, you know. But I'm not going to say you look like crap or you look like this. There are nicer ways to go about it. But before I answer any question that I know is going to come with weird emotions attached to it, I'm like, are you sure you want me to answer that question? Are you sure you don't want to rephrase that?
I think so. It sounds like somebody had to wear a bridesmaid dress that was brown.
No, actually, that is my nephew told his best friend who walked into like their junior year in high school, man, you look like a walking turd in that dress. And when she goes, I don't know why she's so mad at me. And my heart broke. I was like, because you can say that to her because you guys have that kind of insult each other as love relationship on your own. If it was just you and her, everybody's going to look at her like that. That's not the way that works. You know?
There are boundaries between
right.
girls and guys. There is,
you can
try to be as mean as you can, but you can't say certain things. You can't.
That's, well, he's very gay and very much in that zone. So
Okay.
But so they get away with a lot, and they were very much very open, very in your face. That's just how they were with each other. But he was 15 or 16, and so I had to delineate for him what you don't do in public, you know?
Okay.
Makes sense now.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I have a lot of guy friends that are like, you know, straight guy friends that I fully expect an honest answer from. If I'm like, you know, is this too cleavage, I expect somebody to tell me. What?
Is there ever too much?
Do you really though? I mean,
I absolutely do, I expect them all.
Women say that, and then when you do, go no, that makes your butt look fat. And you go what? Next thing you get,
No! I fully expect an answer like, are you going for the whore look? Are you, what look are you going for? You know, I expect these answers from people that I surround myself with, because if it's honest, it's honest. You know, be like, if your entire chest area looks like a butt crack, you may want to cover that up a little bit. You know, I expect these things. But I don't need anybody to yes me to death or to make nice and be like, well, you have a nice décolleté. Perhaps shut up and just tell me if it's too much boobs.
Well, I didn't know how to dress until I got married. So,
see that
you're
that's
not going
weird.
On that, are you?
You have to train them long before you decide to spend a life with somebody. So you know. You train them early on in the relationship. So we have AP and Deb, and I know Deb likes to read her own stuff, but I'm going to go ahead and put AP on the board. You want Adventure to read them?
Hatter.
What?
Can you read AP?
I've got... I can certainly try. I've got these glasses. I got to wear two of them to read. And they go sort of in and out of focus.
Stop telling the questions.
AP Taylor. Okay. Yeah. Well, I know that, but I read it several times. I just read it before. I knew that one, man. No, you better do it.
Okay. This is A Door Swept by A.P. Taylor. And it goes like this. She liked the tingle of the night breeze and the way it would chase out the heat. House temperature dropped by degrees when the zephyr of eve it did meet. We had a hanging wooden screen door with a very small and simple snib lock. Afraid of security, my advice did ignore this safest suburb and quietest block. All proceeded along as days before until one night, it was after 3 o'clock, and she grabbed my arm tightly and then more, something was trying to break that lock. I had no great faith it would hold that long, had done 30 years of service to now, and there was an insistence that felt wrong, urgent action was needed somehow. So jumped out of bed and got to within reach, slammed the main door hard in his face while the house shook to its frame to teach the unidentified person sent into space. That week we got a new steel screen door, and even then it was never open while we slept. Well, I was plentifully rewarded and more for a couple of steps and a door swept. Well, that's some scary stuff right there.
So the moral of the story is...
It's lock your door.
Lock the door.
Don't sleep with your screen door open.
Well, you know, a screen door is a screen door. That's not meant to be security. Anyone could cut a screen.
Or don't try to surprise your wife.
But you know that it's at 3 o'clock in the morning. It's got some quick moves to run across the house and slam a door in somebody's face and to actually get them in the face. That's the thing right there. Slam that steel door right in their face. Serves you right, you freaking thief.
I can beat that. I got slapped several times in the middle of the night for a dream she had.
Oh yeah. Well, go back to sleep. I'll apologize to you.
She's hitting me. I wake up and she's hitting me. I go, what the hell are you doing?
Had my window open, and we have screens here. Not every place has screens, but we do because we have mosquitoes. And the head of my bed is literally 3 inches away from the window. And it was some god-awful early morning hour that was still pitch black. And somebody knocked on my house and said, hey, can you help me? And there was like some guy right in my face. And so I said, nope. And I woke up my husband and he took his big old butt outside because he's 6'4". And he walked out there and he's like, what the hell do you think you're doing? Oh, well, I lost a necklace. You sure the hell didn't lose it here because you're not my friend. Get out before I call the cops. And I was like, I just have to hit enter on the 911. Because what the heck is that? Knocking on there. Can you help me? No, I can't help you at 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning, whatever the heck it was. Go away. And here we have fences by the road, not up by the house. So they literally had to walk up into my stuff. Like, that is not okay.
I lost a necklace.
Maybe his wife was in labor.
You're
going to
lose the
food you
keep standing there.
Or his wife was in labor. Can you help me?
So I just started.
No, I'm kidding.
You know.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I just started talking after I read. So do your thing, Rack.
Well, I mean that was good. I enjoyed the poem. AP does a great job with when he tells a story. A little bit of irony. You know, the only thing missing was, and it goes a little bit like this.
Mm-hmm.
We miss you, AP. I hope you're having a good night. Thank you for sharing that with us, and thank you for taking the time to write. Hatter.
Yeah.
Screen door stories?
Oh, yeah. The screen doors are always open up at the farm. I mean, there was one thing that was security. That was called a dog. A big dog sat in the middle of the great room by the fireplace. So yeah, nobody came. Nobody tried to come in the house. But No, I do miss the sound of my grandma's house and the screen doors. There was a certain sound.
I think screens are great. People can cut the screen and just stick your hand in.
This is true. It's funny. When my kids were little and they were all in school and it would be raining in the afternoon, I have a tin roof only on my porch. I have shingles in my house, a tin roof on my porch. And so when it was really, really raining, and it rains like the Dickens here in Florida, I would just open up the French doors on the porch wide open. And because it's a screen porch, and I would just sleep on the couch, doors wide open, just listening to the rain, because the rain is the most soothing sound. My mom trained me that way. And I never thought twice, because I live out in the country. I mean, everybody's moving here from Tampa. But when I first moved over here, I don't know, 15 years ago, I didn't think anything of it. Now would I? Probably not. Not probably if I was out there, but probably not. Just because
the old farmhouse had the aluminum roofing.
Those tin roofs, I love
that. It was loud when it was
and
failed.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
I love
yeah,
a
you
tin
just,
roof.
You got used to the big grandfather clock, you know, talk, and then chime in every, you don't hear it after a while.
You know, you got horses whinnying and cows and everything else on a farm, so.
Well, I'll tell you what, I do remember the hailstorm. I do remember the hailstorm. I'll tell you, it was like the attic was like an echo chamber that enhanced the sound down to the floor. It was amazing, incredibly loud.
It's definitely a desired aesthetic. I mean, you know, I would venture to say it's even a selling point to some people that like you say, that love the environment and got used to that. The tap, tap, tap. It's own little dance.
Oh, yeah.
The
noises on the farm are great. And, you know, the crow at dawn, the roosters would start crowing, and you'd hear them from other farms down the road or next door.
And that's why you said crow.
Yeah. It was just the sound that you get used to. And I hate to say it, but you tend to not appreciate it. Because you don't hear them anymore, you know.
Yeah.
My roosters never crowed in the morning. They wouldn't crow till 10 o'clock, noon.
Oh.
But they would crow every evening when it went outside. They would call when we would let them run free. They would call the girls real loud about 5 o'clock. And then if they didn't come the first time, the big one would chase them down, make them go all in the roost and go all up in the pen.
Yeah. Crowing all look around the crowing all day.
You call me anything you want, just don't call me late for dinner.
There you go. So it is after one, dear Rack. So any closing comments?
I'd like to thank everybody for calling and for taking the time to write and for hanging out and just even thinking about us. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio. Thank you especially, Pretty Bird, because, you know, I couldn't do this without you. It's really.
Oh, hush. It's my pleasure.
Even
remember,
when Blog Talk is vexing you.
Lust is only a sin when it's somebody else.
I heard that somewhere before.
My. I'm so looking forward to Sunday. But on that note, huh?
Minister Adler.
So I'm going to say good night, and I'm glad you could hang out with us the whole time, Hatter. It was fun. So we will catch you guys next time.
I'm a supporter.
You're an athletic supporter. Good night, Hatter.
Good night, guys.